Welcome once again, my friends, to the party time that never ends. It's your guy, Danny Brams, back in effect. Been a while since we've been here, and I want to thank everyone who's been giving support and shout-outs during sort of a slow period for the show. A lot of things going on behind the scenes in life, universe, and everything, and we still love what we do here, Johnny and I, and we're expanding the brand. I don't know if y'all saw the earlier episode that Johnny and Danny Brackets put out, but sort of a collab with the Full-Time Roundup Boys that we're doing here on the Charlotte Soccer Show. We're still going to have major Charlotte FC content and coverage, but it's time to take the show to a different place. And so what we're going to be doing is expanding. Johnny posted a little bit about it on Twitter. We're going to be expanding the scope, if you will. We're going to be talking MLS as a whole more often. We're going to be talking Premier League more often. We're going to be talking international competitions like the Copa America and the World Cup and everything a little bit more regularly. But we're still going to keep it tight on Charlotte FC. Thanked each other for a great relationship, a great partnership, and now we're going to continue the relationship as friends. I think that happens in the world, right? People do that. I'm never friends with any of my exes, but in this case, I will be. And I love Hot Fly. I still believe it's the best beer in town. And if you want to come hang out, I'll probably be there. Just not in an official capacity so much anymore. So let's decode the presser. I've done 5 minutes of preamble here and probably stuff that nobody else cared about. Just self-indulgent nonsense crap from old Danny Brams. Just, you know, doing it for the clicks. Just trying to get my name and my face out there like I always do, right? According to some. But yeah, Dino's in the house. It's decoding the presser. This is what we do. Let's listen to Dino now. And he's going to go. I haven't listened to any of this. I like to just come into these things cold. I did look. It's about a 20-minute presser. So strap in. We're going to be here a while. Without further ado, Dean Smith.
Any change in availability from the weekend?
No. Pretty much the same. Bill's trained with us today, but tomorrow will probably come too quickly for him to travel with us. Ben Bender's going to get 45 minutes with the Legacy on Wednesday night. Lee Alabarda's, you know, looking good as well. Hopefully we'll get him for the Union game, is it, Philly?
Yeah,
rather than Red Bull, yeah.
Oh, so it's more ambitious.
Yes, yeah, so that was pleasing.
That's good.
Finally, some good news, right? Wow, Lea Labada might be back a little sooner than first hoped. They had originally said the 29th was the timeline. Now the 25th is the timeline. That means, sounds like more midweek games coming up. We've talked about the fixture congestion, and that's good news. Sorry that Bill won't be able to make the trip to Chicago, but I bet he doesn't mind. And yeah, availability is good. Can't wait to see Ben Bender back in action. It's lovely that he's going to be getting minutes for the Legacy and back with the first team probably pretty soon.
Update on Enzo's departure?
No, not yet, no.
The tactical switch you talked about post-game.
No update on Enzo. Son of a gun.
How satisfying was it to kind of see that change of shape take place and know that you can play a grittier game than maybe you had seen in the past?
I believe that we could do it. We've done it in the second half at Nashville. We've done it pre-season when we played against Galaxy as well. I think it's something that we can actually go to and gives us another option. They scored two good goals from crosses in Nashville, and I didn't want to give them the opportunity to get balls into the box from wide areas, so we showed them inside, and I thought the lads really worked well and adapted well to the change.
In terms of...
That's a great call. The tactical change, you may not have even noticed it unless you were watching closely against Nashville, which I was not watching as close as I normally do, let's be honest. I was just soaking in the moment and having a great old moment of fandom for sure and enjoyment with my friends and close folks. But there was a tactical change, and Brant Bronico mentioned it on Monday morning's player availability. We posted the video on our Instagram. I might make a short out of it. Who knows? But Brant really credited that 4-3-3. We'd been playing, you know, the 4-2-3-1 double pivot with the three midfielders and the top man. Against Nashville, Dean really went with the flat three-man midfield to sort of just create, you know, clutter up that thing and prevent the ball from getting into Mukhtar and Surridge. And it paid off big. And the players noticed it. Dean felt good about it. Clearly, Willie P noticed it to ask because he's the man, and we go along.
Chicago, how do they look to you?
I've just been watching a little bit of clips of them now. It'll be a tough game, as everybody keeps telling me. It's tough on the road, but you know, hopefully we can put a change to that. But it's going to be another tough game. You know, they're having a, I think they got beat the weekend, so a bit of a tough time for them. But you know, we have to concentrate on ourselves, really.
People ask me.
Pretty nice long non-answer there from Dino, but hey, what can you do?
Aficionados a lot of times, and they ask me why is the split so different home road. What do you think is behind that? Is it a self-fulfilling prophecy, or what do you think?
Mentality. I believe some people before they even leave have, you know, have accepted that it's going to be tougher, and the only reason it's tougher is because that's in your head. Yeah, you've got to travel. You haven't got your home fans and the home advantage, but the pitches are normally the same size, and you know, you've still got to get into their box and score a goal, and they've got to get in yours, and you've got to defend your box. And I don't believe, you know, there is too much in it apart from, you know, the home advantages. You've got your fans behind you, and you've got home comforts, but. We should have had more points on the road. Our performances have merited more points, but we've not taken chances on the road so far.
Andrew Privet came here.
I agree with Dino there. We should have more points on the road. And I like what he said, which is like the main way to like win on the road is to not beat yourself before you leave. There's so many people that like kind of take it as a given that going on the road means you're bound to lose. And I like the idea that Dino's kind of rejecting that. I hope he can impart that to the players because, yeah, like, don't beat yourself mentally before you even arrive at the enemy stadium.
Center back a year ago, he's a new manager. Did you always think of him as someone who could stay at center back, or did you kind of tinker and maybe toil with him, maybe playing somewhere else?
No, I came and watched the games last season, and I thought he would be a center back when I came here. He's got the physical build, I think. He reads the game really well. He's good on the ball as well. And he's improved his heading ability as well. So I thought he would make that. We've given him a couple of tryouts in midfield during pre-season. But I think he's a centre-back first and a six second.
Steve?
I mean, Andrew Privet is a centre-back. I thought he was masterful against Nashville. So did the league. He made the team of the match day. And as Johnny loves Privet even more than I do, Johnny's like, Privet's always been good. I think he's a little more inconsistent. And I always harken back to that preseason talk that Dean was talking about needing a left-footed center back, which Privet is not. At the same time, we don't hear that so much anymore. Privet's performances have kind of quieted that talk of bringing in a new left-footed center back. So shout out to him. We love Privet. We love the Privet family, obviously. The whole damn shooting match. So love to see a great recognition for him on a great game.
The college kids, and granted this is your first season here, so haven't dealt with that a lot, but you've seen it through your son's progression. Is there a timetable for moving? Because every level of the game you go up, it's faster, stronger, harder. Is there a timetable for, I mean, you've got some young players like Andrew and stuff, and now Patrick and others, Brandon, when he was playing, that have come like straight out of college and been contributors and stuff. Are they ahead of schedule, or is this a norm, or is it an MLS thing?
I think it's probably an MLS thing or a US thing, because you know, you're probably getting players making their debuts, certainly in the European leagues, at the age of 18, 19, 20. Here, because of the college system, he probably gets, you know, 22, 23. So they're probably making their debuts a little bit later. But you can see from Patrick's progression so far, you know, if they're ready, then they're ready. And I think at the age of 22, 23, they should be ready. You know, and I have no qualms putting them in, you know, if I think they're ready. Andrew Privet certainly looks like he was a draft pick, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, Patrick, draft pick. Tiger Smalls has had minutes recently, draft pick as well, you know, so if they're ready, I think they should be ready coming out of college. What they have to adapt to is the day in, day out, you know, mentality of a professional football, I suppose. And, you know, that's our job to get them ready for that.
And granted,
Dino, if you're good enough, you're old enough. He's been saying it since the beginning, and you know he just loves. Dino loves to give a debut. He loves to run young players out there, and that's why he creates great foundations wherever he goes. Even when results haven't come in at his previous stops and previous jobs, and he's had to get sacked for one reason or another, those clubs always end up doing better even after he leaves because he's laid such a great foundation and developed young players. Something to look forward to. I don't want to get rid of Dino anytime soon. I'm sure he doesn't want to be leaving anytime soon. We got a lot of work left to do here with him. But it's also really nice to know that even on the back end of everything, we can also expect that the development that Dino's putting in is going to pay dividends even after he does eventually. No one, nothing lasts forever, right? And we both know hearts can change.
That's the difference when you're in college. You also, being a student is supposed to be a primary thing. But do you feel like the level of the college game is giving them enough of the technical training and just repetition to be professional athletes?
I think it does. I suppose what it also gives you as well, because they've been students, they've been used to being in a classroom, so they should be students of the game as well. You know, so when we come in this learning zone and we're reviewing or previewing a fixture, you know, I expect them to be part of the vote.
Quick pop in just to say I absolutely love when Dean says the learning zone. I absolutely love the freaking learning zone. It's the best.
Cool thing of what they see and what they don't see. And because they're recently out of college, it's actually not as new to them as somebody who may be not used to that way of how I coach and see the game. No worries.
That's a pretty interesting perspective when you consider how many people think that like college soccer is a disadvantage to players coming out. But here you see Dean pointing out a way that actually it could be an advantage because it preps them for his style of being very focused on teaching and development. Awesome, awesome point.
Nicola, is he someone you have in mind to start Wednesday since he didn't start Saturday?
He'll be in mind to start along with 18 other outfield players.
I mean, imagine thinking Dino's going to give you his starting lineup. What a dumb question. Sorry about that.
I also had a question about the off-field treatment rule. This weekend, you know, Messi was upset and said, you know, with this type of rule, we're going in the wrong direction. And I know he kind of echoed a little bit about your sentiments when we first talked about it. Now seeing these rules implemented for a couple of games, has your stance changed that any at all, or
yeah, my stance hasn't changed. I made my thoughts on the subject. You know, we concede a goal against New York and we have to have a player then go off the pitch because he had treatment during their celebrations of the goal and he has to go off the pitch for the next 2 minutes. I don't understand that rule. Why should then the team have that advantage? You know, we made the most of the advantage on Saturday. Nashville had only 10 men on the pitch when we scored the goal. I don't see why we should have that advantage. When somebody gets injured, they're not looking to gain an advantage by being down on the floor. I felt it was always, you know, down to referees and for them to manage the games, and I think it's become difficult for them to manage it, you know, with players having to go off now. You know, but there's no bigger voice in the MLS than Lionel Messi, I wouldn't have thought.
So it's interesting to hear Dean's perspective there. I'm kind of torn on this because when the rule was first announced, I was like, oh, it's an anti-flopping rule. That's great, right? And I liked it because I want to promote the idea that guys should not be flopping. And I know soccer players get hurt. I'm not the person who's like, oh, soccer players are wimps. You know, they're always rolling around, blah, blah, blah. I'm not like that. I understand like getting kicked really hard by a cleat at full speed with no pads on is going to freaking hurt. But I kind of liked the rule because I was like, just force players to get up and go. But my thoughts on this are already changing. It's not really because of Messi. It's actually, I thought Messi whining about it was actually kind of weak on his part because it's like, bro, you're Messi. Like, just freaking take your all the money they're giving you to play here and just chill, bro. But he said what he said, and it got me thinking. I was actually talking to a Tifos, one of the great Tifos of the show, Brandon Davis, and he actually kind of was the one who started to change my thinking on it because he said, really what this new rule does is it forces guys who might actually be hurt to try to get up and play earlier when they're early hurt and not stay down for treatment. So I think a better way to do this would be, instead of this new rule, I actually think you know, like many things, they should just enforce the existing rules that are on the books. You know, how many times have we heard that in America? But it's because the referees have a discretion to give yellow cards for what they think is simulation. And I think they need to be, that's really where they needed to be more aggressive. And so I actually, even in the last 24 hours, my thinking on this rule has changed. So credit to Messi for starting the conversation, but he's not the one that changed my mind. Shout out to you, Brandon Davis. Loved meeting you last year and hope to see you again sometime this year. And thanks for being a fan of the show and a friend of the show and someone who keeps the conversation going. You're a great person.
This one is more on a couple of times during the season you've mentioned, you know, a little bit, I don't want to call it emotional stability, but you know, you get a sense that sometimes your players are down, and that's something that you've mentioned that you've worked on. Is that something that you've seen improve over these last couple of weeks?
Yeah, it has. You know, I don't want, you know, we had it against Minnesota where a goal changed our mentality and it shouldn't do, you know, because both teams are trying to do that in a game. That's, you know, what the game is about. But, you know, it shouldn't change your mentality when that happens. So it's about having emotional control and, you know, making sure we don't make the same mistakes. And, yeah, we're getting better. You know, we've got some young players within the squad. You know, we've got a young centre-back pairing, for instance. You know, we... Last week against Portland, we had, you know, Crown Legacy's, like, you know, front line in terms of Niko Petkovic and Paddy playing up front. So luckily we've got a good mixture. We've got our Ashley Westwoods, Nathan Burns, you know, with the experience that can help the younger players as well. So, you know, it's really important that they keep learning and have that emotional control.
Got to have that emotional control, baby. Emotions in check, always. I think he's right on point where he talks about the difference in experience and maturity in the squad and all that, and I think he's managing that well for the most part.
What have you noticed, particularly from these guys? Like, what are some of the common traits that you see that they're able to just get into the team so quickly and make a difference?
I think what you've seen from the two of them so far is consistency, you know, in their performance, and that's a big thing. Good learners as well, as I said before, coming out of college, you know, and they want to get better. And I think, I suppose, they feel a kind of pressure being a draft pick as well, that, you know, they want to go and do well. And, you know, our job is to give them that platform. Cheers.
Steve, did you follow up?
Yeah, going
we
back,
love the young players.
The
we love them.
Issue with that. I mean, for years, soccer has been unique in its fact that the ref, center ref, has his watch and they do that. Now they calculate the added time and things like that. Would it be better for the sport to evolve to a hard clock where they just stop the clock when there's time wasted, and even doing it when players on the field? Because it's always been, it should never actually be an issue, because you know whether players are on the field or off the field, because the referee can always add time. But would a hard clock be better for the sport at this time?
I don't think so, personally. I think that's what a fourth official's for. They're not actually involved in the play. They're giving some advice to the officials who are involved in the game, but their job should be able to, you know, stop and watch and start it again and tell the officials how long they believe should be left.
Are they consistent in doing that? You know, for some games, like when a goalkeeper's holding the ball for 30 seconds or more and things like that, and rules have been set up where that should be policed, but it's not.
They're all set up to be policed now, aren't they? They're all wired up, so I think that's down to them. And we have to allow, you know, the officials who are in charge to control the game. That's my belief, you know, rather than, you know, we've brought in a new rule this season that, you know, we'll see at the end of the season if it's been a success or not. I made my feelings at the start of the season, you know, on it. You know, but I think with VAR as well, we've probably taken a lot of control off the on-field officials now, and a lot of their feel and touch, which is probably going in the wrong direction. VAR was brought in for clear and obvious errors. You know, and we probably need to go back to that sometime.
Yes, the human part of VAR.
Yeah.
It's funny to hear Dino talking about, like, you know, in this setting, he's all like, you know, hey, trust the officials. The officials should run everything. But then when Charlotte FC loses a match, it's like, ah, the official fucked up here, here, and here. But kind of funny. Interesting discussion. But hopefully we get some questions about Chicago soon.
Plan to come back Wednesday night and have the guys do their regen, I guess you call it here. I'm Marty. Is this something you did in England, except maybe weren't getting home at 1 a.m. I mean, are you out here at 3 a.m. watching the practice, or how's this
going to go? Yeah, no, it is something I've done before in the UK. And we were getting back at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes as well. So, you know, it's one of them where you have to weigh up and do you get back and let them all go home, and then you get them in later at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah, some of them got kids and will still be up at 8 o'clock, and you've disrupted their sleep anyway. So it was, for me, you know, what's the happy medium? What's the best plan for it? And for me, it's, you know, get them back, do their regen, get the ones who've started through the bathing contrast, get a massage, and the ones who haven't played, get the workout done, and then get them back home, and they've got the rest of the day to themselves then.
Will that be only if there's a midweek game, or will that be every
midweek? No, that's only when there's a midweek game, yeah.
Love a little insight into the
whole. There's a lot of sleeping pods at other clubs, obviously, I've been to.
Love the insight into this training regimen here. It's kind of interesting. This is the first double game week of the year. The guys are going to be pretty tested and tired and things like that. I do think it's going to lead to some lineup changes. So we shall see.
Yes, I have them. So obviously you can go back and then they're in the room straight away. But it's just a part of the game, because players need recovery from midweek games to play again on the Saturday, and sleep is the best recovery you can get.
No, they probably prefer.
Ain't that the truth?
On a hot summer's day, you know, if that goes anyway.
Yeah.
One p.m.
You're probably right. Yeah.
Another kind of off the field question. Alicia Fogarty, as your nutritionist, has she taught you anything new about how American approach to nutrition and team?
I think probably like us coaches, you have coaches associations throughout the world, so you're always seeing different parts of the world and what they do, and nutritionists will be the same. You know, I had an Irish guy who was at Villa, and you know, who'd come from a different sport, come from rugby union. You know, so there's different people, and yeah, so it's been interesting with Alicia how she does it. She's got real good respect from the players, you know, and she'll send her report through to me every now and again, and their body fat, so I'm checking up on them all the time. So, yeah, it's pretty good, and she's really good at her job.
I think she needs help with the vegetables.
With that. we've got the beetroot now, so we're all right.
The Irish guy.
Maybe a little preview of what you might be expecting from Carol Walton there, if you recognize her voice in Football Friday, one of the best weekly features about Charlotte FC that comes out every week. And seems like she might be working a little profile piece on the trainer, Alicia, there. I think that's good, and can't wait to read it.
Was Guinness part of the nutrition?
Yeah, Guinness and Spuds.
Guinness and Spuds, baby. I love it. I love it, yeah. He might not have been joking there.
Touched on it last week about having the three-game week, and you've touched on, you know, the recovery seems to be the biggest hurdle in a stretch of games like this.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get time on the pitch to go through as in-depth analysis on the opposition as you would normally. You know, so it's that's the time when you just need recovery strategies. And you know, you're giving some trust to the players as well, but we're working with them as well. It's just like a normal day in terms of, you know, we control two of the meals that they have, you know, by what they put out for them. And then you're trusting them with what they eat in their third meal of the day. So, you know, people like Alicia, he's coaching them and educating them on what are the right things to do. And we've got a good performance team here who, you know, helping them to recover and giving them good recovery strategies as well.
With the Enzo situation,
I mean, this is all interesting stuff. But like, can we let's get Chicago? We got to play Chicago here. You know what are we going to do in this match, guys? Come on.
And how are you feeling with your group that you have between now and the July window in terms of finding offense? And because it's obviously every team's goal, so make sure you got enough
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm good with where we are. I'm good with where the players are. You know, we've had a few little injuries throughout the first 12 games already. You know, a couple of hamstring injuries, calf injuries here and there. But we're starting to get back to, you know, hopefully next week having a full squad to train with.
Feeling pretty good for sure. I was actually at training earlier today, saw everybody there except Bender wasn't there. Liel was jogging off to the sideline. We heard his update earlier from Dino that Liel might be back a little sooner than later. So got to feel good getting everybody healthy and coming together at the right time. I'm pretty sure we'll see Bender playing with the first team before the end of May, but we shall see. Because at the end of the May, after all this fixture crunch, we're going to need him.
Watson needs that. And Enzo was a portion of that. Do you have the personnel that you want in place, or are you kind of...
No, I believe we've... You know, if it was going to affect us, if Enzo ends up leaving, then I wouldn't have allowed that to happen. But we're all in agreement that if it does happen, it would be the right thing for the club.
You touched on the young players.
That's kind of cryptic, because most of us have assumed Enzo's gone, but now Dino's speaking in kind of in terms of ifs. If ifs and nuts, right? If ifs and nuts were Enzo's butt, we would all have a wonderful Christmas. I consider Enzo gone. I don't know about you if you're out there listening, but... For me, it was the "I'm gonna miss you, little brother" message that he posted on the Kerwin Vargas Instagram post. I think that clearly stated where his head is at. Obviously, deals can fall apart. The Duncan McGuire saga still rages down in Orlando, but I think Enzo's gone. It doesn't maybe sound like Dino thinks Enzo's gone. I'm not sure if he's just playing it coy or just playing it kind of like not want to say anything definitive until something happens. I wonder, Dean didn't really reveal like what was in his head there, I feel. I feel like that was kind of the political slash PR answer, which I get. Probably the right answer for him to give in this situation. But, I mean, if Enzo would be content to come off the bench backing up Patty Ojemong, I think then we'd probably end up keeping him. But the fact is he doesn't want to be a super sub. Patrick is better. For what we need with this club. It's not saying Enzo's bad, but Patrick is delivering what a striker should deliver. So I would love to have Patrick be able to start and play 70 and Enzo played last 20, but Enzo's not going to be happy about that, and that's not a good waste of – that's not a good use of resources. That's a very Chicago Fire move is to pay – or a Dallas Burn or FC Dallas move to pay your DP – to have a DP who plays – you know, only plays the last 20 minutes as a striker.
That you're working with between – big club, Crown Legacy, guys that are up and back. What makes a good pro in your eyes? And do you have the right kind of guys to help these young kids learn what it means to be a pro?
Well, there's only one word I always put to a good pro, and it's attitude. That's the first thing. If you've got a good attitude, then you've got a good chance. Because they won't be drafted or scouted and brought in and recruited by the club if they're not good players. But the thing that takes them to the next level is the attitude. So that's the biggest thing that we want to see from
them. And the veterans that you guys...
Man, I love that answer. Attitude is everything in soccer and in life. But I would say that exact same answer if you asked me in my job about young people coming into the field, like what makes the difference between someone who's good and someone who's bad. It's attitude. Everyone at this level is talented, but attitude is what sets you apart.
And even with Christian kind of, you know, helping...
Good role models, good standard bearers as well in terms of what we want in terms of our standards here. So they're the ones that can drive the younger players as well.
Kelly, have a follow up.
If Bender's able to go 45 minutes Wednesday night and all goes well, would he come back? You know, and maybe like what's his next step?
His next step will be probably we'll try and arrange another game. Here at the training centre and, get him some more minutes in that, maybe 65, 70 minutes, and then keep progressing him from them. Because he's been out a long time. You don't want to give him 45 and then jump him into a first-team game straight away, and there's too much of a risk of injury or re-injury.
I like that. I like that sort of timeline there. Great minds. Carol and I both wondering about Ben Bender sort of at the same point of the presser, so very interesting. A few minutes left here. Let's see what else we can get from Dino.
Is it for a guy like Ben, who's been out for so long? Because I can only imagine he's anxious to get back?
He's very anxious, yeah. You know, he's obviously very keen to get back because he's a real keen baker, and he bought me a nice loaf of bread last week. Yeah, so and it was very tasty as well.
Incredible moment. Love Dean. Love. He's always quit. He's always got some little jokey story to tell, and that's well played by him. Bender's Bake Shop. If you're not following Bender's Bake Shop on Instagram, the Queen's Pitch podcast dished all the tea on that one. So make sure Ben doesn't run the account, but someone is running the account, and those are authentic Bender bread creations. The kid loves to make his artisanal bread, and I love that he's baking for the gaffer. You know, hashtag bacon for the gaffer. Could it catch on? Maybe.
Apparently he catches fish as well. I've been told that as well.
He does that as well. Loaves and fish.
Ben
also talked about his faith, his strong Christian faith in that interview with the Queen's Pitch. And so it only makes sense that he's into loaves and fishes, right?
What do you think the next step is for Tiger Smalls?
Just to keep progressing the way he is. I've really liked what I'm seeing at the moment. I think he's coming on and having an impact when he's come on so far. You know, he could have scored against New York City. He's done well last week against Portland. I thought he did really well in helping us see out the game on Saturday. You know, won a free kick on the edge of the box in the last couple of minutes. Got caution, but it was probably a good caution, you know, because he delayed a quick attack after Mukhtar had caught the ball and the free kick not been given. But apart from that, it was really clever from him. So. He's a boy who's got an awful lot of potential that I'm excited to work with, to be honest.
And one other player.
I mean, as of now, Tiger Smalls is our backup number nine. I don't know if he would call himself a number nine. I don't know if Dino would call him a number nine. But Tiger Smalls is the Patrick Ojemong sub, unless Enzo somehow comes back. So, and he mentioned that yellow that Tiger picked up. I loved that yellow. He freaking ripped the dude down by the back of the shirt, and he didn't even care. He knew he was getting a yellow when he decided to do it. And it was kind of bullshit because he had been fouled and it wasn't called right before that. So Nashville tried to quick counter, and that could have been a really dangerous moment. And Tiger Smalls said, hey, there's a few minutes left in this game. I can take a yellow. I just subbed in. I'm just going to grab this guy by the back of the shirt and pull him to the ground. I thought it was pretty funny.
At least ask you about with Crown Legacy, Aaron John has been really progressing well and getting some good moments. How much of that is on your radar, and how much have you been able to kind of absorb what he's been doing since he's obviously, you know, big in the academy and really contributing now?
Yeah, no, he's popped up with some really, really good, important goals for the Legacy as well. So he's been doing well and improving. And I've made it to all the home games I could so far. You know, I've just had a sit down with Jose then, talking about their game and our game Wednesday, and where we can, you know, where players can go. So we're working well as a single entity at the moment, which is only good for us.
We're loving what we're seeing from Aaron John out in Matthews for the Crown Legacy. Five goal contributions in the last five games, I believe, from him. I'm not sure he makes the first team impact like a guy like Ojemong did last year towards the end of the season coming from Legacy, but maybe. We'll see. For right now, I'm content to let Tiger Smalls be the guy, but if Aaron John keeps doing what he's doing, who knows? Sky's the limit, right?
Cool. I got Sam Spencer on the Zoom.
Hey, Josh. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Sam, you?
Can't complain. So first question, Andrew Prippett was just named to the MLS Team of the Match Day. Obviously, you had a lot of good things to say about him tonight and after the match, but care to add any comments on him, you know, being on the team?
Yeah, well, it doesn't surprise me because I thought he was excellent on Saturday, put in a really good performance, kept their two DPs up front really, really quiet, him and Adil. I think they're making a really good partnership at the moment. So, yeah, there's lots of improvements we've seen. And he's a no-nonsense player who just gets on with his job. He's very low maintenance for me, wants to keep improving. So, yeah, you know, you can be pleased with his performance last weekend.
And then more on Wednesday's match in Chicago. What do you think the keys are to the match and Charlotte being able to improve its road record? I know you've frequently said, including today, Do you think the teams deserve more points on the road? What do you think that you can bring on Wednesday to close the deal?
Well, I think it's got to be our performance levels. I think our last two performances have been good. And I would go back again and say New York, our performance levels, we certainly didn't deserve to lose that game. I thought we counter-pressed really well, created some really good opportunities, defended well when we needed to. We need more of the same, but obviously take our chances when they come along. But it's a mentality again, you know, consistency of performance will get you the result.
Consistency, baby. That's exactly what Brent Bronico was saying. I asked Bronny, like, what's it going to take to win on the road? And he said consistency was the message that Dino had been hammering home to them. So clearly, we got an example of it right there. Great press conference. A lot of stuff that wasn't necessarily about the upcoming Chicago game, but some interesting insight. And people, obviously, now that Dean's been here a while, people kind of want to dig a little deeper into some of his philosophies and that. So I got no real beef with it. Don't ask Dean who his starting lineup is. He's not going to tell you. So don't waste time, please. Other than that, fun times. Great to be back. Great for start getting back into the flow a little more after some very big things in my personal life have been going on. And I love y'all. Thanks for watching. Thanks for being part of this community. Thanks for everything y'all do. Appreciate it. If you don't already subscribe to this YouTube channel, do me a solid and freaking subscribe. Every time I see a new subscriber, I think we're doing something right. So appreciate y'all. It's for the crown, baby.